Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, broadcasting out of Monticello, Maine in beautiful Arista County. And the show is hosted by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And that camp is next year from August 5th to the 11th in Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires. And we're delighted that we've already lined up some great guests, including Christopher Monckton, Professor Willie Soon, Dr. Duke Pesta, as well as Chris Ann Hall. And to learn more about not just our summer camp, but all the other activities we do on a year-round basis, our Speakers Bureau, our Sam Blumenfeld Archives, et cetera, visit our website. And by the way, this show was also, you can also go to podomatic.com and get this show as a free download. And also on YouTube, visit our Camp Constitution YouTube channel. So I'm very pleased and honored to have as a guest today, Sean Meehan from Nevada. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Howard. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you, and I appreciate you coming on with sort of short notice. Now, just to give you a little introduction to Sean. Sean is, I would call him an Article 5 patriot. He is one of a network of patriot activists that are working to prevent our Constitution from being wheeled into an operating room to be eviscerated. And what's the term they use? They don't use change. They use restructured. That's the term that Michael Farris uses, formerly of Convention of States. And Sean, so tell us, tell all of the listeners a little bit about you, your background, and then what got you involved in this goal, this drive to prevent this Article 5 convention.
Well, I'm a retired master sergeant from the Air Force. I was a fuel specialist and then a aircraft loadmaster, and later in my career, an aviation safety mishap investigator. I retired to Northern Nevada and been here for about 10 years and joined the local county Republican Party and got active in the state party. I've been the chairman of the Resolutions Committee for the state convention for three different conventions. And about 4 years ago in January, I was challenged by one of our members in the county to debate this issue of Article 5. And I knew nothing about it. I initially looked into the Convention of States, and initially it seemed like a very interesting topic, something that could actually work. Then a friend of mine who I trust said, you need to look at both sides of this. And so I started really digging and found out just how terrible it was. And I was challenged to this debate by this woman in front of our central committee, and found out later that that's what the Convention of States does, is encourages some of their members to go into organizations where there's people they would want to become informed and engaged, find somebody that's known and or respected in that organization, and then defeat them on the topic, thereby gaining a perceived credibility. And I don't know why, Hal, but just since then, it became my number one issue. I've focused deep in on it. I've always been passionate about our country, liberty, and the Constitution. And I think, God just said, this is where you're going to do your work. And I've been incredibly passionate about Article 5 ever since.
Well, it's interesting, too. You hit the nail on the head when you say that the Convention of States people, how they get supporters. And it's my opinion that most of the people that support this aren't—I wouldn't call them evil or subversive. They're mostly well-intentioned people that have the premise is correct that we have a runaway government. The solution is incorrect, that we need to amend it in order to curb that government. But I've been a full-time activist since 1990, and probably a few years before that on a volunteer basis, and I've never seen so much venom and contempt and hatred of opponents of an Article 5 than I did with Convention of States people. I don't know if it seems to bring out the worst in them. I've been threatened. I've been called all kinds of wicked things. I think there was a fellow He wasn't with Convention of States. I think he went after both of us. He's with, Friends of Article 5. First, I think his first name is Bill, Bill Firth. I think he accused us of being treasonous because we're both former military, and that because of being former military, we have some kind of obligation to support an Article 5 convention. I thought that was one of the most outrageous things. I was told that I would be taken out at some point, and I kind of challenged this guy, you know, how are you going to do it? When are you going to do it? So I don't know if it brings out the worst in people, but I know you've had that experience too. And I have no trouble with a debate, you know, give me the pros and cons. But when you start going after people and, you know, insulting them, questioning their integrity, questioning that, well, you're a treasonous person if you oppose an Article 5 convention. I think you've experienced that. And I think you've had some direct contact with, was it Mark Meckler, who's the founder of Convention of States?
I have. In September of 2014, I'd been on this walk for maybe 9 months, and I was invited to a debate group up in Reno, Nevada, with a woman, a conservative lady that I know. And I got to watch Mark Meckler and Janine Hansen of Eagle Forum go at each other. And Janine has been working this for over 30 years with Phyllis Schlafly when she was still with us. And it was interesting. It was the first thing I got, but I guess I just saw how these folks operated. So I was approached by a friend up in Carson City, Nevada, to make a presentation or a debate on Article 5. In front of their central committee of about 100 people plus guests. And I said, sure, this will be my good chance to really get going on this. And then I'd been scheduled for a couple days, and I was actually told that Mark Meckler himself would show up to debate me. And being new in the issue, I was a little nervous, but, you know, I upped my game on my homework and preparation. Uh-huh. Well, then I got to where I was just about to have the debate, and he didn't show. Well, I found out later that one of his county directors down here, because she was very honest with me, told me that they were directed not to engage me publicly, and it called it a scheduling error, and they sent some guy that just wasn't on his game, and it was pretty downhill. As far as what you said, I agree. A lot of these people that we're competing against to defend our Constitution, they're good American patriots. They're falling victim to a patriotic sounds, deception. They probably got behavioral psychologists helping them frame their message, and they're just scaring these people. They accuse us of being scared, which, you know, well, that's kind of funny, but they're very angry and mean in what they do. I was actually personally sued by a Convention of States lobbyist when I caught a video of him being less than fully honest, I thought, with a state legislator. I posted it online with some comments and questions and a reference to some Nevada law, and I was not called or asked to take it down. I was served with a lawsuit immediately from a high-powered law firm. Thankfully, my insurance covered it, and it was summarily dismissed. They appealed it, and we did a – because insurance, when they pay the bills, they're involved. We had to settle. The terms of the settlement are confidential, but these people were unbelievably aggressive and ridiculous. And what I got to think that that is funny, because Meckler, as you know, the two things that his group does, one is Convention of States, and then the other one that his umbrella group, Citizens for Self-Governance, does, is suing the IRS for suppression of Tea Partiers. And I actually think that's great that they're doing that. But what I thought it was funny is, so they sued the IRS for shutting people up, yet I got sued by one of their lobbyists to shut me up. And I think that was the thing where I said, you know, I'm going to turn on the turbochargers, and this is my game, and they cannot come at our Constitution. Because that oath we took on active duty, I don't believe that it ended when I retired. And I still want to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic.
I'm of the same opinion. In fact, I testified recently at the Massachusetts State House on the subject of an Article 5, and I mentioned that I took an oath just a few miles from where the State House is when I was 17 years of age back in 1976, and I said that oath stays with me the rest of my life. So, by the way, for those of you who are listening who may not be familiar with an Article 5, I've discussed this issue a number of times over the last 4 years on the show, at least 2.5 years, 3 years or so since we've had the show. Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution calls for two ways to amend that document. The first way is where two-thirds of the United States House and Senate approve the amendment, then it goes to the states. Three-fourths of the states have to ratify it, or Congress can change the mode to state ratifying committees. And they did that with the 21st Amendment. I think that was the only time. And what's very fascinating is that when these people who support an Article 5 testify, whether it be the Wolf Pack, the leftist, or the neocon convention of states, they always forget, for some reason, to bring up that important fact that an Article 5 convention, that Congress can change the mode of ratification. They'll say, well, it'll take 38 states, and there's no way that 38 states would ever do anything unreasonable or pass crazy amendments. And of course, they've done that. They've done, in my opinion, and I would think in the opinion of many freedom activists, they did that with the 16th Amendment. They did that with the 17th Amendment. The 16th Amendment was income tax. The 17th Amendment was one that basically stripped away the power of the state legislators to appoint U.S. senators. And that passed. And you think, boy, if something like that could pass. And that didn't pass with ratifying committees. That passed by state houses. And I think it's important to point out, too, a tactic that has been used over the years. And I know some people employed this tactic. They were not necessarily in favor of an Article 5, but they figure, well, if we have enough states that call, you know, that apply for a convention, and Congress will have to act, and they'll, because they don't want a convention, so they'll go ahead and pass the amendment. And that's probably what happened with the 17th, because I think there were only one or two states shy. Of course, there were less than 50 states back then. I think there were 48. They were one or two states shy of having the necessary two-thirds, and they went out and passed the amendment. So, but I think it's like playing Russian roulette. That may have been a wise tactic 100 years ago or 50 years ago, but I don't think it's a very wise one today, especially in today's political climate. So anyway, so Sean, you had some success in Nevada recently.
Yes, at our last legislative session earlier this year, I co-wrote and submitted, Janine Hansen helped me with it, SJR 10, which is a resolution that repealed all outstanding Article 5 petitions from Nevada, to include one for a balanced budget that went all the way back to 1901.
How many applications did Nevada have, extant applications?
I believe we had 10 that we were able to identify in our research.
Yeah.
And what was really humbling was the fact that we had, two subcommittee votes, two hearings, and then two floor votes, each in our assembly and then our Senate, and that was all four were unanimous votes. And it was just amazing. And we made sure to talk to all the legislators and figure out what we learned. And we're a Democrat-dominated legislature out here right now. And, the Democrats were against Article 5 for a different reason. And Meckler and his people, I think, wrongly and deceptively try to paint a big brush, throw something to stick at the wall and say, oh, see, we're working together with George Soros and all this. And
right.
It's just laughable, and it's actually insulting to the people that they're saying it to, because anybody that thinks about it for 3 seconds can figure it's a completely invalid argument.
Is Meckler – I want to commend you guys for doing that, by the way. But Meckler is the one he cries that his opponents are supported by George Soros. I think he recently had a posting that say that we're either enemies of the country or – grossly misinformed or deceived. But I was at that meeting. There was a 2-day event at Harvard University back in 2011. It was in September. It was called a conference on the Constitutional Convention. That's right. They used the term Constitutional Convention. And Mark Meckler, who really came on the scene just a few years before that, it's almost like Eisenhower from a lieutenant colonel to a four-star general in a couple of years. So Meckler was really in the middle of nowhere, I mean, not really actively involved. He got himself involved in his National Tea Party group. Next thing you know, he's the go-to guy for the media. He loves the media, except when he got arrested in New York City for a gun charge, which I think was wrong, and he ends up running from the media. You didn't want to sit there and stand there and defend the right to keep and bear arms. But that particular event at Harvard was co-sponsored by Larry Lessig, a man of the far left, a man who enjoys mocking Christianity, as he did in front of a group showing a video of a man who was supposed to be Jesus that got hit by a bus, and he thought that was pretty funny. He was a former advisor to Obama, and then one of the other people at this event was a man named Cenk Uygur. And Cenk, I didn't know who he was when I went to this event in 2011, but and we weren't. I got media credential actually the second day. I wasn't there the first day. A former colleague of mine was there the first day, and I got his credentials. We weren't allowed to videotape inside or even do any interviews of any sort, audio or video, inside. On the outside of the steps, there was Larry Lessig, whom I recognized, and he was being interviewed by Cenk Uygur of Young Turks. And I actually caught them on this little video where Cenk was saying that the first convention back in 1787 under the Articles of Confederation, he said, was a runaway, and let's hope for more run. See what we got? Well, we got a great thing, and now we want to have another runaway. And Lessig laughed. He said, yes, let's hope for another runaway convention. And they thought it was pretty funny. And wow. Meanwhile, when they testify, and by the way, you can actually find their Cenk Uygur's video on the Young Turks. I hate to give, hey, go to the Young Turks and find it. I don't know if it's still up there, but it was up there the last time I checked. It might have been a year ago. But if you go to Camp Constitution's YouTube channel and put Cenk Uygur, Hal Shirtler, or Larry Lessig at Harvard, I think, it will come up. And I just asked Larry a question as after Uygur had finished. So I did, it was only like 5 minutes long, but it's, you know, pretty damning. And when one of the attorneys testified recently in Massachusetts in favor of their version of an Article 5, he poo-pooed the idea of a runaway convention. They said, hey, your founder, not only did he say it could happen, he wanted one, you know. So it was it was kind of interesting how we can refute that. Let me ask you, what other states are you working in right now? Any besides Nevada, have you been testifying anywhere else?
I haven't actually testified in other states other than talking to legislators over the phone. Uh-huh. I'm working right now with what our long-term strategy is going to be with our Guard the Constitution website and with lobbying organizations. We're trying to work with, you know, your folks that are in our little network and find a way to fight these guys with good. Fortunately, we've got great information on our side. And we think that educating the people is very important. But what I've realized in my personal take on this is some of the folks that orbit in our anti-Article 5 group, as you know, informally, Hal, are awesome as far as the knowledge, the accuracy, the research, unbelievable. And they do a good job of getting that across. But what I've noticed in my interactions with the people on the street is they a lot of it goes over their head. You got to break it down yes. into a why. I mean, I can tell you what the Second Amendment says, and most of us are hard and fast on that. But right. there's actually a lot of people that aren't aware of why that is. You know, they say, oh, it's for personal defense. Yeah, it's also to
right.
Push back a tyrannical government. God forbid it ever happens. And
right.
they or to deter them from ever becoming that tyrannical where they come after us. But I just think that that's the approach that's worked for me is kind of explaining it, walking people through it. And my bottom line argument, Hal, is that when a convention gets called, and nobody can dispute the rationale of this, is I've got Nick Dramius, I've got Ferris and Nadelson all on the record saying that that soon as a convention is called by Congress, there will be litigation. Well, as we know, that if there's something like this where states or the federal government is a party, you're required to have original jurisdiction in the Supreme Court. Now, many of us say the Supreme Court is one of the biggest problems where
That's
we don't
right.
follow our Constitution.
That's right.
So I ask people purely on a logical standpoint, and you don't need to be a student of Mason or Madison or anybody like that. I just ask you, if we agree that the Supreme Court is a huge problem, why in the name of God would you want to give the issue back to them to say, well, then we're going to define how a convention is going to go? And further, I've learned through our friend Publius and other people that this is what they call a non-justiciable question, where if the court does the right thing, they won't even get involved. And I would say that, call to your listeners' attention, that in Missouri, there's already been a lawsuit without a convention call from, resolution from that state, because their state laws say that even resolutions must be signed by their governor. But we know that Article 5 being supreme on the issue says no governor's signature is required.
Right,
so,
exactly.
They say there's an immediate problem. Why would you want to add 7 to 10 years of federal litigation that would get incredibly painful? Meanwhile, the country's still sliding over the cliff, and then at that point being laughed at around the world. We want to hold our Constitution up to the world as the light of liberty, that 5,000-year miracle that really worked. Not throw it in the wood chipper, as many people are pushing to do.
That's correct. And there are people, I refer to them as neocons, and the term neoconservative doesn't mean they're conservatives. They tend to be big government Republicans. They sometimes agree on some of the issues. But overall, they like to see a all-powerful government just run more efficiently than the people on the left. And they work quite well together. And you saw an example of that with former President George W. Bush going after Trump. He never went after Obama, to my knowledge. It's interesting too. There's so many issues when it comes to Article 5. You brought up the Supreme Court. We also are told by Convention of States that Congress is the problem, and Congress would never limit itself. Congress will never do this or that. But under Article 1, Section 8, the very last clause, called the Necessary and Proper Clause, Congress believes that because they've tried to pass bills, they haven't passed them totally yet, there are no laws, but they are the opinion that they do have some say over an Article 5 convention. And who's to say that a congressman cannot be delegates to a convention? There's no rule against that. Now, the congressman can't be a member of the executive branch. That's in the Constitution. But definitely state legislators are routinely delegates to their state conventions. So here is the Supreme Court, part of the problem, will have a say. And Congress will have a big say on how our convention can be run. Yet they're part of the problem, as we're told.
Absolutely. I'll get a couple quick things in here on that. It's also interesting that I believe it was Ferris testifying to a subcommittee in Arizona is on video saying he's not really worried about term limits on Congress. He wants term limits on the judiciary. And I say, wait a minute. The judiciary has no role in constitutional amendments. So if he sincerely wanted this, he could go to Congress with all their supporters they claim across the country. They could pass a constitutional amendment without opening us up to the Constitution Convention wood chipper, send it to the states for ratification, and I can't think of anybody out there that wouldn't want to limit the Supreme Court. Now, I personally don't feel term limits are necessary because judges are supposed to serve during times of good behavior.
Good behavior.
But if that's one they want to push for and not open up the trap door of a constitutional convention, I'd be fine with that. And I think that the listeners need to understand our friend Robert Brown up in Montana gives a great presentation called The Power of 500. And I've kind of modified that with the next step of what we're doing is if you get 500 people in a congressional district to pressure the legislator, that congressman, they have proven that they can hold them accountable, make them vote more conservatively, and develop a two-way street, proactive, working relationship. Well, if you do the math, the number 435 congressional districts, mm-hmm. and whatever the Puerto Rico and District of Columbia, how that works out, that's 217,500 people needed nationally without question to ensure adherence to the Constitution. They've recently claimed they have 3 million. Hal, I would submit to you they have absolutely no interest in obeying the Constitution. They are wholly focused with over 10 times the people needed to comply with it. They're wholly focused on changing it.
Well, this is interesting because a lot of these people that support Article 5, and you're right, I don't think they have 3 million. They may have had 3 million people visit their websites, especially they seem to have almost unlimited access to some of the neocon talk shows, radio and TV shows. I've never heard Mark Levin give 1 second of time to an opponent of Article 5, but boy, they're on all the time. You know, Tom Colburn, and now you have Jim DeMint, and you had Meckler on there, and I think Farris was on there a few years ago, and some of the Hannity, he'll give time to the supporters, but not to the opponents. Thankfully, Alex Jones had Robert Brown on recently. Robert gave it really wonderful. I think it was on for about 15 to 20 minutes. Actually, I had a friend chop that segment out of one of his videos, and we put it up on Camp Constitution's YouTube channel, so you can get the just get Robert Brown and Alex Jones discussing. And Alex Jones came out against it. So even though I'm not a complete Alex Jones fan, I'm glad that a lot of people listen to him. He's got a big viewership, a listenership, and I'm glad that he came out against it. But you're right, there's 3 million people. If they really were activists, as they claim to be, we would get rid of Common Core. We would have a solid conservative Congress. Well, maybe not every district, but quite a few. And we would have congressmen on the Republican side that are constitutionalists. If they're really, but what they seem to do is they burn their bridges. They focus on one issue and one issue only. They don't see them dealing with Common Core. You don't see them about the illegal immigration issue, the sanctuary city issue, the repealing Obamacare, and all the other important issues. Their goal is to get a convention or bust. That's it. That's all they want. And they seem to have a lot of money. I think I use the ratio 1,000 to 1. For every $1,000 they have, we spend a dollar. It may be more than 1,000 to 1, but by the God's grace, we've been able to hold them off.
Yes, and I found some of their financial records, money trickling down from the Koch brothers, and it's on the order of a couple million dollars a year. But you're right. And when they pursue their efforts, it's really frustrating because I actually caught them when they had their fake theater production convention last year to try to brainwash and insult America.
Pony show, yes.
They had a press release they issued with their PR director and their attorney and then Utah Representative Ken Ivory, who was the chairman of the stage show. And they wrote in this press release, quote, "As Thomas Jefferson counseled, this must be done by the states themselves, erecting such barriers at the constitutional line as cannot be surmounted." Well, when you actually, and I've got this on guardtheconstitution.com, my website, I've got this letter posted, is if you look at the full text, it's a letter from Thomas Jefferson to Archibald Stuart in December of 1791. And what he says actually is the complete opposite, is, quote, "Then it is important to strengthen the state governments, and as this cannot be done by any change in the federal constitution, for the preservation of that is all we need contend for." And they talk about that the barriers are a wise government. And what's important on this, if you look at the Arizona called or petition they really did recently did for Article 5, it says in there that only currently active state legislators may be delegates to an Article 5 convention. So state legislators that have failed their Article 6 oath, taken their 30 pieces of silver from the federal government, and I would argue let the problem happen and even made it worse, are going to be the delegates that are going to try to fix it. We have a problem here. I think that the founders are flipping over in their graves and are crying at what we've done to the gift of the Constitution they gave us.
You bring up an interesting – they seem to like Farris – we'll talk about Federalist, I think it's 40, where Madison says, yeah, we overstepped our bounds. I'm not quoting verbatim. And he'll say, Madison said the opposite. And okay, maybe I missed something. I read it. I said, I have a pretty good reading level since I was learned how to do it, read phonetically. I can't find that. So they're adding things into the argument. They're just making things up as they go along, I think.
Yeah, they're really twisting quite a few things, and I find it interesting. One of their paid spokespersons, Senator Tom Colburn, and I should be clear, I haven't had the proof that he's paid. I'm going to assume he gets some sort of salary. But he's a Convention of States spokesperson. He's perceived as a conservative, although if you look at his registration, his votes in the Congress, he was more conservative than some, but by no means a doctrinaire conservative. He actually wrote to Phyllis Schlafly and said, quote, "A person or organization that will engage in this kind of deceitful innuendo cannot be trusted to tell the truth on anything." And I sent a message to him and said, "Senator, I absolutely agree with you on that point, and that's why we cannot let the Convention of States roll our Constitution into the operating room."
That's right. And he also supported the Bush bailout. Hey, Sean, we're out of time. This is the fastest 30 minutes in radio. So where can listeners learn more about your particular effort, Gio? Give out your website again.
They want to go to convention. I'm sorry. They want to go to Guard the Constitution, all one word, guardtheconstitution.com. And we're just getting it redone with some information and starting our next efforts. And we've got a contact form on there if they're interested. We're going to start collecting input from readers, good constitutional articles that are going to provoke thought. And we're going to create a national alert system that's going to make this finally do what's right, so nobody's going to ever think we need a convention.
All right, Sean, thank you so much. We'll be in touch. And, folks, you've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Sherliff. And until next week, may God bless you.